Good morning, everyone. The Old Testament reading is taken from Proverbs chapter 5, beginning at verse 7. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you lose your honor to others and your dignity to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich the house of another. At the end of your life, you will groan when your flesh and body are spent. You will say, "How I hated discipline! How my heart spurned correction! I would not obey my teachers or turn my ears to my instructors." And I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always, and may you be intoxicated with her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? This is the word of the Lord.
This reading is from Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 to 32. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Barbara. It's lovely to have you with us, Barbara and John, this morning. Warm welcome to both of you. As you know, we're in the book of Proverbs, doing a sermon series in this book that was largely written by King Solomon, although two other kings also contributed to it. Solomon was the wisest king in the ancient world. He was also a covenant king. By that I mean that Solomon was the king sitting on the established throne of David. And the reason was that God, whose name was I Am Who I Am, God founded that throne because way back in the past he'd entered into a covenant with the house of Israel. For back in the day, God whispered to Adam and shouted to Abraham and to Moses that he was going to call a nation into existence, a people of this world. It's going to be a civilization that existed in time and space and history. And he was going to be their God and theirs alone, and he was going to rescue them and save them and protect them and lead them to a land flowing with milk and honey. And so what God did was to say to this people on oath, I swear to you with uplifted arm that I will be your God and you will be my people. But if I am to be your God and you are to be my people, you must listen to my instructions. You must obey my commands. For I am the Lord who brought you up out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, out of the house of bondage. And because I did this for you, you must not listen to the wisdom of other gods, who are no gods. These are false gods who did nothing for you, who never redeemed you, never rescued you, never brought you out with an outstretched arm from the house of slavery and the house of bondage. And all the people said, we will. We will bind ourselves to you. And so God began to teach them, to instruct them. He said, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Do not go after other gods. Do not embrace them. Do not be intoxicated by them. For they will be exhilarating and exciting, and they will tell you things that you're desperate to hear. Their words will be as smooth as oil and as sweet as honey. They will promise you freedom, but you will soon discover that they are cruel. And they will demand more and more and more, and offer you less and less and less. They will demand that you sacrifice your children and kill your parents. And in the end, you will groan. You will die. Your flesh and your body will fail. Your culture will die. Your civilization will die. And so remember what God did. He began to say, be wise. Listen to me. Do not lean on your own understanding. Do not harden your heart. Do not cast my words behind you. Do not say yes, yes to my face and then no, no behind my back. Look at this world I created. Look at the natural order. For if ever you are to be wise, if ever you are to live with skill, if ever you are to flourish in this world, this is what you must do. You must note the distinctions and the boundaries that I, your creator, have embedded in the creation and embedded in your soul. For these boundaries are fixed boundaries. And if you disrespect them, you will die. You will crash. But if you respect them, you will live and fly. Now, of course, we all know this. This isn't controversial. This is just normal. Because we know this because the Wright brothers observed, noted, and respected the invisible laws of aerodynamics. And because they respected those laws, they were able to build the first motorized plane, and so they flew and lived and did not crash and die. And so God says, observe this world that I made and which I have placed you. Jesus said the same. He said, consider the birds of the air, Look at the lilies of the field. Marvel at the night and day, the land and the sea, the sun and the moon, those clock pieces in the sky that regulate the cosmos, the heavens and the earth, humankind and animals. Notice the distinction between them. They are not the same. Notice they are male and female. And in today's passage, Solomon takes the one further step. For in this passage this morning, he says, if you are to be wise, if you are to thrive in this world, you must observe another great distinction. This distinction is a moral distinction, a spiritual distinction, a covenantal distinction that is also grounded in promises and oaths, a distinction that is created whenever a man says, I will. I take you to be my wife. And whenever a woman says, I will, I take you to be my husband. And so two biologically complementary, separate sexual beings become one flesh. In mind and in body. And so God says, Solomon says, as his covenantal king, God says, to be wise, you must not only recognize the distinctions that exist in the creation, you must also notice the moral distinction that exists between a woman who is your wife and a woman who is not your wife. This distinction is real. You ignore that distinction, and you will die. And have you seen, when Solomon begins to talk about this, he talks about it in deeply erotic terms. In fact, the whole passage that Barbara read out is almost too erotic to be read out in public. But it's in the Bible. And it's meant to be read out in public, so I will. But listen to what he says. I mean, listen to this. Drink water from your own cistern. Running water from your own well. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. May her breasts satisfy you always. May you be intoxicated with her. Why, my son, be intoxicated by another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? And you say to me, is this in the Bible? This is too much. I thought I was coming to church this morning. What's going on here? Well, in order to get at what's going on here, we need to remember that Solomon is both a king and a father, and he's talking to his sons, the young princes. These young princes are naive. They're uninstructed. And so they're innocent at the dawn of their lives, but they're about to inherit a kingdom with all its traditions and its moral codes. And I don't know if I should apologize for this or not. I won't, because it's in the Bible, but it's all written from a male perspective. I mean, did you notice that? But we should remember that on a number of occasions in the book of Proverbs, the king insists that what he is saying, the queen also endorses. So, for example, at the beginning of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, at the start of the book, Solomon says, listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. So here you have the parents, the mother and the father, the king and the queen, warning their children about the dangers of sexual folly and of succumbing to the cunning of sexual predators, whether they're male or female. And so, let me just say this, although it's written from a male perspective, it applies equally to both men and women. And so this is really, really relevant for us today, I think. For every day in the papers we read about infidelity, adultery, sexual abuse, broken relationships. And this affects men and women equally. It's everywhere, everywhere. It's in the church. It's in the government. It's in youth organizations. It's even in the BBC. It's in academia. It's in the NHS. It's on the internet. And you think, what's gone wrong? I mean, clearly, this is massive dysfunction. The sexual chaos in society is huge. And so Solomon tells us what's wrong. That's why he's instructed his children. He says, you've got to understand, for as I teach my sons, the princes, who are about to enter into their great inheritance, let me take you back to the Garden of Eden, where the whole of the human race was about to enter into an even greater inheritance. Because they're about to inherit the whole world. And you'll remember that in that time at the very beginning, in the time of man's innocency, there was a king, another king, a greater king than me, a king whose name was I Am Who I Am, and he created a garden, and in this garden he placed Adam, a man, a sexual being, made in the image of God. And because he was created in the image of God, he was built, structured, deeply wired, and designed for relationship. For God himself lived in relationship, and Adam is made in his image. And God himself, as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, lived in relationship. And so Adam was designed, being made in the image of God. You are designed, being made in the image of God, to live in relationship with I Am, your Creator. That's why you're born. That's why you're in this world. But it even goes further than that, because although Adam was designed to live in relationship with I Am, his Creator, he was also designed to live with another creature also made in the image of God. And so Adam had a great longing, a great thirst to drink from a well. He had a thirst for wholeness, for completeness, because there was no one in the garden who corresponded to him. And God saw his thirst and his longing, and he said, "It is not good that Adam lives alone." And so God created another creature, one who was like him, in that she was a creature also made in the image of God. But at the same time, although she was like him, made in his image, she was totally unlike him. Because although he was male, she was female. So, what does this mean? She could correspond to him. She fitted him physically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. Where he was weak, she would be strong. Where she was weak, he would be strong. And do you know what Adam said? He said, "At last, my thirst is quenched. I have a never-ending fountain. For here is one who is like me, flesh of my flesh, but not just flesh as I am flesh, one who is also spirit as I am spirit, and who can therefore relate to her creator as I relate to my creator. I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it? How glorious is this? And so Adam says, like me, she's a physical, moral, spiritual, and ethical image-bearing whole person. Do you see how profound this is? For what Solomon and his queen are saying to their children is this: when you enter into a relationship with a person of such dignity, and nobility, and majesty, and stature, and grace, you're entering into a relationship with all of her, not just part of her. For the two of you will become one flesh. And that union is not just a physical union, but a moral, spiritual, and psychological union. Therefore, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Brilliant. Now, why is Solomon saying this? Solomon's saying this because there were, back in the day, those outside the covenant community who had not been instructed in Torah and were basically fools. They had not been instructed in the Word of God. And so they don't understand the world in which they live, and they don't understand themselves. They're ignorant of these things. They're foolish and unwise. And so it is that later on in the book of Proverbs, it's a very moving passage. The king is sitting in his house, and he's opened the lattice of his window, and he's looking out into the street. And he describes a young man walking along, and he's going to the home of a stranger, an alien. It's highly likely that she's a Canaanite woman, she's a pagan. And she says to him, "My husband is not at home. My bed is covered with linen sheets from Egypt. Very, very expensive. My bed has been perfumed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon, even more expensive. Come," she says, "let's drink deeply of love until the morning." And it's so exciting. So full of promise. And the young man goes. Solomon says he's like an ox going to the slaughter. This magnificent, dignified animal is about to be dismembered, but he's completely oblivious of the fact, and he doesn't realize this, and he's about to enter an alien environment, not so much because his partner is a Canaanite woman, but because she does not recognize him as a whole person. She regards him as a commodity, as a thing, as someone to be used, because she doesn't want him. She wants his money. And so she wants his body to satisfy a thirst, not a thirst for relationship, but a thirst for wealth. And so she uses him. She abuses him. And my friends, the pain that this can cause is indescribable. And you don't need me to tell you this, but you know about it. There is an ocean, a Pacific Ocean of grief and pain out there, experienced by both men and women and children whose bodies have been abused, but they feel that pain in their minds in their souls, in their hearts. And so it is that vast rivers and streams of sorrow and grief spill out and over down the generation into the lives of children and grandchildren. Solomon says, why let your fountains out in the open square? And this grief and pain lasts in people's hearts and minds for years. Some people never get over it. Perhaps it's happened to you. When suddenly one day you realize that the person you loved and gave your body to never loved you. They were just using you. And so you gave yourself to them. At first you thought, well, I'll just give them my body as if somehow I will be unattached from my body. So I'll just give them my body for a night, a weekend, a week, 5 years, whatever it is. But I'll never give myself. When that happens, it destroys you. And that's simply, I don't know if this is news, I don't think it is, that is simply, let me just say something, you are connected to your body. And now this is happening on an industrial scale. It's happening through a click of a mouse. When you give your body, your mind, in this instance, to others, but not your body. That industry is worth billions of pounds a year. And my friends, let me just say this, it's a snare. It's a trap. Millions are enslaved to it. Lives are being destroyed. Young children are watching it. Men and women are committing suicide. Solomon says the cords of their sins ensnare them. Yes, of course. Because God will uphold his moral order. He stands behind it. And so just as you cannot take hot coals into your lap and not be burned, so says Solomon, you cannot misuse sex and not be hurt. It's part of the created moral order. It's how the universe works. And God vindicates it. Sooner or later, sometimes suddenly, he'll vindicate it. You know, as I was preparing this sermon, I was listening to a lecture by my old teacher, Dr. Bruce Waltke, who's 5 years ago wrote 2 volumes of commentary on the book of Proverbs. Anyway, he's a great guy. He tried to teach me Hebrew, but failed utterly, not because he's a bad teacher, but because I was a hopeless student. But in one of his lectures on Proverbs, he told a story. He said, you know, there's a man in his church, a Christian man. He was a businessman who was on a business trip for some weeks, away from home, and you know what it's like. He's feeling lonely, starts to feel sorry for himself. No doubt he told himself a narrative that he was not much respected or loved at home, and that he was overworked and underpaid. I mean, you can see the way his mind was working. And so he decided one night, he'd never done this before, even now today, he can't explain why he did it. He said, I'll just call for an escort. A time was set, 8 p.m. She comes to his hotel door. He opens the door, and it was his daughter. He said, at that moment, I died. In my heart, I died. In my soul, I died. Listen to what King Solomon says, like a deer stepping into a noose till an arrow pierces its liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it'll cost him his life. In like manner, many are the victims who have been brought down. The slain are a mighty throng, for wide is the road that leads to the grave, leading down into the chambers of death. It's a terrible tragedy. Terrible. And you see, that is why Solomon and his queen are warning their children, because they want them to be happy. Do you think God wants you to be miserable? Do you think he created you in his image in order to give you unhappiness and misery in your life? No, what they're saying, what Solomon and his queen are saying, is they want their children to be intoxicated in their marriage, to be drunk with pleasure and yet secure, confident, free. They want them to enjoy sex within fixed, secure boundaries. They want this pure, life-enhancing running water to flow as channels between riverbanks, bringing life to the generations yet unborn, and where the children and grandchildren will know who their parents are, and that their parents love each other, and that they love them, the fruit of their union, and therefore don't try to kill them. It's a glorious, healthy, life-giving vision for flourishing in this world. But of course, I'll finish on this. It's not just a vision for this world, great though that is. It's a vision for the world to come as well. You know, sadly, the tragedy is that as Solomon grew wealthy, and his kingdom became more and more secure, he stopped listening to his own wisdom. He stopped listening to Torah. He stopped listening to the Bible. He threw God's words behind him. And he began to embrace not only many women, but he began to embrace their gods as well. Because when he joined himself to their bodies, he absorbed their minds. And so at the end of his life, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. On his death, the kingdom fell into civil war and split into two. The bloodshed was enormous. It's an awful tragedy. But you know, my friends, there is hope. There's hope for even Solomon. There's hope for all the abused. There's hope if you're an abuser. There's hope for the despairing. There's hope for those who throughout their whole lives want to find a husband or wife, but either through circumstances or settled conviction, never did. There's hope for all those of you who've been damaged in relationships. And you say to me, okay, so where is this hope? You know, there came a time in Jesus' life when he was speaking as a king to the nation of Israel. But they were throwing his words behind their backs. They were going, yeah, yeah, nah, nah. And he said, do you know the queen of the south, the queen of Sheba? She came to hear Solomon. And she embraced his wisdom. She committed herself to it. But now, said Jesus, one greater than Solomon is here. And that's me. Solomon rightly spoke of flourishing and thriving in this world. He was right to speak about it even though he failed, because his teaching was true. But I am greater than Solomon, said Jesus. And I will not fail. And my kingdom will not fail, because my teaching is not just for this world, but for the world to come. And when I come in glory, says Jesus, I will bring my eternal kingdom into this world. It's for the abused, the sexually broken, those who are looking for love all their lives but never found it. Because I have committed myself to you. I've committed myself, says Jesus, body and soul. This is my body, said Jesus. This is my blood. And he sheds it for you and for me. And if you commit yourself to him, I'll tell you one thing. Jesus said, at the end of the age, there's going to be a wedding. There's going to be a marriage. Will you commit yourself to this king and enter into a relationship with him, body and soul? If you do, you have a glorious, forgiven, intoxicating future. Amen.